Hey everyone, this is your first Welcome Back to the Show. You will notice throughout today's episode that the audio quality may change suddenly and dramatically at various points. We've had surprisingly few technical issues recently, and this time we had all of them at once, and we had to go to fairly drastic lengths to even get the episode together. So if one or more of us goes from sounding normal to sounding like Bandage Man in the space of a few seconds, that would be why. Also, just issue a quick apology in advance. When we say that babies aren't cute, we don't mean yours. Your baby is adorable and amazing and perfect, just like you, probably. So with that in mind, here's your actual introduction. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. So Colin is away this week, living his best life as he always is. And in his place, I've invited not one, but two special guests who together combine to form a super special guest. It's the most iconic duo I know, my two treasure boxes of love, Matt Liguori and Matt Gagan. Thank you both for being here.
Aw, thanks, Dom. We're so excited to welcome you and to welcome everybody to the debut episode of Matt Chat. We're getting picked up for our first season, hopefully. So let's, I'm excited.
Yes, welcome to Matt Chat. We just need a theme song now, and we're good to go.
Yeah, I already got Welcome America. He's all over it. Yep.
Perfect.
I'm glad I could be here for your worldwide debut, and when you guys are superstars in a few years' time, I hope you remember the small role that I played in this.
No promises.
We'll see.
Okay, I'll live in hope. But thank you both for coming on. I guess a good place to start is there was a lot of controversy about both the ending of last season and how the twists on this season were going to impact things. So if you could both individually talk through what your expectations were coming in and how this season has lived up to those so far.
All right, I'll go first. I had very low expectations. I hated all the twists from last season. I hated the new twists. I hated that there were 15 idols every episode. And this whole Ghost Island thing just made it seem like there was going to be a new twist every episode now, and I did not like where the season was going. But so far, it hasn't been too bad. But I'm not looking forward to where it's headed down the line.
Yeah, I liked last season for the most part. There was a lot of times where it kind of lost interest. By the end of it, with the final four twist, it was kind of like, all right, let's move on. So I went into this season like excited, I guess, but as excited as I can be, given the past two seasons were, game changers, which we don't talk about, and then heroes and healers and whatever. But I mean, so far this season, I've been enjoying it. I know we're only like three episodes in, but I really like this cast, so.
Yeah, you said that the end of last season kind of soured it as a whole. How easy do you find it to separate the negative and the positive parts of a season? So can you still appreciate maybe some of the good things that came earlier if the ending is so traumatic, I guess?
If I didn't do that, I wouldn't be able to watch Big Brother.
Sure, yeah. My Big Brother philosophy is I tune in for week one, maybe week two at a stretch, and then that's the good part, almost reliably. And then I dip out, and I know I've already seen the best they have to offer.
Right. For me, Big Brother, I don't care when they do that on Big Brother, because I've already lost all hope in that show. Whereas Survivor was supposed to be the pure show where they stick to it and everything works out. But these last couple of seasons in particular, it's starting to make me lose hope as well. But like I said, so far this season has been pretty good.
And this Big Brother season, they managed to extinguish all the hope we had after one episode, which I think is a first.
Yeah, we don't talk
about
that.
We're not going to talk about that. But it's okay. We're all okay. We're going to recover. And
speak for yourself.
Yeah, I'm only saying that to like make myself try to believe it, but it's not true.
It's not great, no. So circling back to Survivor here, we're going to have a swap very, very shortly. But before that happens, we need to check in with these two tribes that we saw only last week, as it turns out. So on Malolu, James is asking them not to hate him for throwing the challenge. Turns out they didn't hate him anyway. They all seem to like him and respect him. But that's just who James is. He is paranoid at every moment that any minor failure is going to be like his the destruction of his reputation.
So James, I thought was good going into this season, and so far I think he was a little messy the first week, but I think he's landed nicely on his feet here in this most recent episode.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't put him at the top of my power rankings, and I still don't think he should be, at the top. But I thought he was going to be a lot more boring than he actually is. He I don't know. He just seems like a lovable guy, someone that would be, good to hang around with, good to have at camp. And Yeah, I don't know why he's beating himself up so much. That his tribe seems to be over it. So, you know, I think he should be fine.
Yeah, I thought maybe he wouldn't mesh so well with his younger crowd and he might come across a bit stiff. And there was some of that we saw last week, but he seems to have recovered from that in great form. And we've seen this a lot recently, that the people who go on to win, or at least do very well, can have a rough start and rebound from that. You know, we don't have these seasons anymore where someone just comes in, dominates a game from day one, and then nothing ever challenges them. There's always some hurdle that you need to clear along the way. And for a lot of people, that's the first few days. It's just getting used to the situation. And so, yeah, maybe James was a little at risk the first week. He blew that challenge, which wasn't great. But now, I think more than anyone else, he had a great week this episode.
Yeah, I thought maybe that was going to be Jacob who struggles at first and then goes on to redeem himself and end
me
up
too.
Winning. But
me too.
Yeah, those dreams were crushed pretty quickly. So maybe it can be James. I wouldn't be upset with it.
I wanted to have Liguri because he's the only person who had a worse winner pick than I did, as the results turned out.
Oh, that's why I'm here. Listen, that was I've talked about this with both of you offline, off air, whatever this is. It was a very last minute pick, 7:57, 3 minutes before the episode, just sitting there like, wow, I didn't like lock in an official winner pick yet. And then it came into my mind. I'm like, oh, Gonzalez seems like a good pick. Texted that to Matt over here. And then, yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget where I was when you made the worst winner pick of all time. Although my winner pick is still looking for screen time, but we won't talk about that.
And let's not forget out of our draft who the first person out is in episode 3.
Yeah, I have the hashtag first one out somehow, which is pretty impressive if you think about it. The only way it could have gone better is if I picked Gonzalez and Jacob. But so Gonzalez is gone.
We made it so far last season before we lost an entire person. And then this season, Dom's like, you know what? Let's make this more fun.
I don't think Dom wanted to play.
I've gone to Draft Redemption Island now. I've taken over the ghost team and I'm slowly working my way back up. So hopefully I can rejoin the game at some point. But yeah, so we're not getting off to a great start here. We had Gonzalez going, then Jacob, my entire draft team with Morgan, who I also thought was a pretty solid winner contender. And then we had Canada just humiliating themselves as a country yesterday. So the past few weeks have not been easy to get through.
Stop bringing that up.
Yeah, we really need to stop talking about that. You're going to make us sad again. Yeah, is that where Colin is right now? Did he not join you on this podcast because he like ran up to Canada to like yell at someone?
that wouldn't surprise me. That's not the story he told me, but who knows where he is nowadays.
I hope so.
So we have that very brief scene of Malolo, and then we cut in slightly to Naviti because we have to revisit this Dom and Chris storyline. That seems to be the only thing going on over there, and it's going to come into play in a big way on these post-swap tribes as well, when the two of them end up together, and then that conflict ends up splintering that entire Naviti tribe. So outside of that, though, there really wasn't anyone that we checked in with. So Chelsea still hasn't got a lick of screen time at all. Bradley...
Who?
I'm told he's on the season, but I'm not sure how... that might be fake news. Then right. Bradley makes his Survivor debut to complain about Woo-hoo! The conditions and then disappear again. There was no one else there who really had a great week either. So my impression so far is we are really meant to like and be invested in the old Malolo tribe. And my take at this point is I would be shocked if the winner doesn't come from one of them.
You're discounting everyone's winner picks in Kellen and Wendell and King Bradley.
Yeah, they're... Right, they're both on that tribe, but I don't know. I think weren't some people talking about how we might have the winner from that tribe since they got so much screen time, like those specific people last week, even though they had nothing to do with the story?
That is the line that we often take, is if you have no reason to see anything from someone and they're still popping up on your screen, there's probably a good reason why, even if it's not apparent at the time. But I think in the premiere, you have to give something to the other tribe. And if you're not giving it to anyone else there, apparently, then I guess Kellen and Wendell and I guess Chris and Dom are the only people left. So it's interesting that Kellen and Wendell, I think, were two of the preseason favorites and continue to be very popular among a lot of people, I think ourselves included. But the rest of that tribe as a whole doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So it's you have these two people who are right at the top of the food chain and then everyone else who has kind of dropped off. Whereas Malolo, I think, is more evened out. There are a lot more people there that I think could be in with a shot.
It's just for the most part, pretty much everyone has gotten screen time on Malolo, whereas on Naviti, I think I'm doing this right, the purple one's Naviti, right?
Yes.
And on Navidi, yeah. Half of them aren't getting screen time. The other half are getting a bunch. And then there's just Sebastian talking about Candy every week. So who knows what to think about them.
Yeah, Wendell started off strong. And we were like, all right, maybe Wendell knows what he's doing out here. But this week, he seems like he was left out of the vote. He, I don't know, he took a little bit of a dip this week.
I don't know if he was left out of the vote so much as the vote didn't go where they all expected it to go. So it seems like within that Naviti block, he is right at the center there. Everyone seems to really like him. Morgan in her exit interviews was gushing over him. She seems to be a big fan. So Wendell in that group seems to be doing pretty well. That group itself, though, seems to have sabotaged itself to the point where they're now in the minority and they're going to need to fight their way back out of that somehow.
It was 5-4 going into the... once they swapped, next thing you know, it's 4-4 when Chris gets sent to Ghost Island. And now we're looking at 4-4 again, but it's more like 4-2 coming out of this. And the minority four, who, you know, looked like they were in trouble, now seem like they're on.
Yeah, Navidi really crumbled here.
We heard them discuss a lot among the Malolo group, given that we can blindside someone, who do we go for? And the consensus seemed to be, we need Wendell for the challenges, let's go for Morgan, and then I imagine the Dom versus Chris thing will come to a head next week. So Wendell himself might be able to skate by for a bit, but then when he gets back to the merge, if he does, he's not going to have anyone to go back to necessarily. So I'm starting to think Wendell might be classic merge boot material, or just after the merge, maybe.
Bite your tongue.
I hate wants that.
No, this isn't what I want to happen. It's just what I think could happen. If we were going with what I want to happen, Jacob would be running the game right now. He would be on his way to a Boston Rob style coronation. But I have to live with reality as it is.
I'd love to live in that world. What a fun world that would be.
Yeah, we know what would be going on right now in reality TV if we got what we wanted. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not looking as great for Wendell as it was. But I still have some confidence in him. And I think after I lost my winner pick within like the first hour, I was like, all right, switching things up. I took Wendell. So that's probably even a worse sign for him now that I switched over to him.
I don't even think he's going to make the merge.
Yeah, he probably won't make it to the next tribe swap.
Okay, so you think there's going to be another tribe swap before we get to a merge then?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I wanted to say before. Did we expect that they were going to be swapping into two tribes and not three when they got down to 18? I didn't see that coming.
No, I don't think anyone expected that.
Like, I fully expected a three tribes.
Right, that's what they seem to do.
I was expecting 3 tribes of 6, but I think that might be because everybody else was also expecting that, and I just went along with the flow because I assume they must know something that I don't.
Right. I guess, how do you, like, send people to Ghost Island with the 3-tribe format? I don't know if they'd be able to figure out something for that.
You could work around that if you wanted to, I guess, but it seemed like another complication that you don't want to have to bother with. But, yeah, so I am wondering, along the same lines as you guys, if when we get down to 15, let's say, if we're going to split into 3 and then rejoin back into to 1 tribe for the merge, because we know from the Legacy Advantage coming into play, the merge is going to be at 13 in all likelihood. So if you count backwards from there, it would seem a bit weird to have the swap this early if nothing else was going to take place between now and then.
Yeah, we need to get some people out of here, though, because with these 20-player seasons, it's always tricky because you never know if there's going to be a medevac or some kind of... hopefully there's not a medevac or a quit or anything, but that means that they have to get rid of people fast because what is it, like day 9 out there and they still have...
So
all these people,
listen up. This is time for my first harebrained theory of the season. Okay.
Oh boy.
So thus far, Chelsea has been the most invisible contestant ever, by my understanding. And that doesn't seem like an accident. That's not something which, okay, someone in the 500 or so people who have played Survivor needs to have that dubious honor. It may as well be her. This was like a conscious effort. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe Chelsea quits or Chelsea does something which causes production to get mad at her. And so they're punishing her with this kind of complete invisibility. So that would account for that and also cut the numbers down to comply with the schedule.
I don't hate the theory. It could very well happen. I don't think they need to like cut the numbers down. The last time they've done 20 person seasons, they've gone into the final 2 weeks with 8 people still and the finale with 6. But yeah, if you're thinking there has to be a reason why Chelsea has gotten literally nothing so far, that's as good a theory as any.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like completely unprecedented, because my brain goes back to a few seasons ago with Millennials versus Gen X, when we had no idea that Lucy was on the show until her boot episode. I think it was episode 4, and she just showed up. She had a little bit of a story, and quickly she disappeared. And then it happened the next episode with Cece, which is, you know, those two episodes really soured me on the early part of that season. But I wouldn't count out she still gets voted out in a traditional way, but I see where you're coming from.
You could think, well, she hasn't gone to tribal yet. We spent most of our time on the tribes that we need to focus on. So if you look at some of the other people who are in the same boat, like Bradley, I think, would wish that he was invisible this week instead of getting his only survivor content so far being about complaining about the state of the tribe. But instead, like, Chelsea is just nowhere, and unless they're going to give her like oodles of screen time to make up for this later, maybe she's just meant to be written out of the season effectively.
Has she even had a single confessional yet?
No, she's had nothing across 3 episodes. No.
Neither has Bradley, but at least he's been like on the screen and like talking to people.
Right.
Complaining.
Yeah, Chelsea has not had the Chiron yet. I don't think her name has appeared on the screen.
That's insane. And we're 3 episodes in. That's, wow.
Well, are we 2 episodes in? Are we 3 episodes in? I'm
three.
Counting
we're
this.
Three.
Yeah,
it's 3 episodes.
I'm counting this as 3, but I believe the jury officially is still out on that. But either way,
I have this discussion every year.
But I mean, like, to be fair, it's not just, you know, Chelsea's had 0, but like, I don't remember. I think we saw Desiree once in the premiere, and then we haven't seen her again since. So
right.
It seems like they're not afraid to go, you know, to take some of these unimportant characters right now and just kind of ignore them. And I don't think that Desiree is going to go the rest of the season being as quiet as maybe Chelsea might. So I still have some hope that these people are going to come out and play sometime soon. But yeah, it's kind of weird.
I went back and watched some of their secret scenes to see, maybe it's like a Rick Nelson situation where they're just not that good at talking to the camera, so they always go to other people for that kind of material. But both Chelsea and especially Desiree were perfectly engaging in front of the camera. You know, Chelsea was just saying like the usual stuff that you say in a throwaway confessional, but it wasn't like she was delivering it poorly or anything. So yeah, to me, at least so far, there doesn't seem to be any obvious reason why you would just cut them out entirely instead of just giving them a few scraps here and there.
Right.
We are going to spend a little bit of time with those former VT people here, though. So Kellen makes an appearance here, endearing herself to a large swathe of the Survivor audience by insulting other people's babies. Now, I wanted you both here because I like to have a wide range of views represented here. Luguri, you are pro-baby. What was your take on this?
I don't know where... Well, okay, now I sound like a jerk if I say I'm not, but I don't even know how to answer that. I'm pro baby in the sense that I think that they're fun to have. It's cool to have like this little human that like you have to, you know, take care of and stuff. Like listen to the Matt Hoffman interview on the Terrence show. He like fully described how I would feel about having a child on that end. So babies are ugly and that's my take on it. I think that anybody who does try to tell you that your baby or anyone else's baby is, oh, that's like the most adorable thing, is straight up lying. It's just like when people say that like old people are cute. I think that that's such BS on both ends. Old people, I'll give it to you more than babies, but babies are not cute. I don't know why we're pretending that they are.
I'll take a baby over an old person any day.
I feel like there's such a big like Twitter poll that Colin could do about this, like who's cuter, babies or old people, even though it's going to end in a tie. But I've gone through like the past few years of my life trying to figure out like why people think that babies are so cute. Like they're better when they get to like a year or 2 years old, but when they're like a few months old and they're just like this, I don't know. I probably am like offending a lot of people, so I should stop. But
no, that's fair. I would like
I'm
to
sure,
say
I'm
that
sure
I
your
am.
Babies are all cute.
I am pro baby, though. I want that on the record.
Wait, you two, you're ganging up on me here?
I am pro baby. Yeah, sorry.
Explain yourself.
Well, Dom, what's your take?
We can get to my take in due course, but I'm blindsided to hear that Gagan is also pro baby.
I don't know. I mean, Liguori's sitting here saying that they're not adorable. I beg to differ. I've never met a baby that I didn't have a good time.
I'm talking really young.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if I haven't hung out with really young babies before, but And I've never had to really care for one. If I ever had to, my opinion would probably change, but I don't know.
Tom, you would be surprised about the amount of times that Matt and I have been like up at like 11 or 12 at night talking about how like how cool kids are and how like we would both like want a kid if it wasn't for the fact that we're like way too young and like have no control over our lives right now. But like that and conversation has happened at least twice.
Well, I hope as the two of you grow all together, you can have a kid and raise it, and I hope it will be called Matt. You have to continue the lineage.
I don't know.
That's the dream.
You'll have to ask my my I think wife Haley Strong, because I think she's the one in charge of that.
So my take on babies is, isn't that the phase of life that you have to go through before, like the you want a baby so that eventually they will stop being a baby? The end goal is that you have a fully grown kid who actually is a functional human being and not just some like mewling mess that you need to clean up after and pay attention to constantly.
Sometimes you have a kid and they grow up to just sit in their room for hours on end watching Big Brother live feeds, and then you just scold them and say like, oh, you're just going to sit inside your room for days and days and days watching people in a house? Like, I've gotten that before. So sometimes, like, the end result isn't as great as you'd like it to be.
So I'm sure we're going to get lots of angry emails about that. domandcolin@gmail.com, if that's your preferred mode of communication there. But in any case, Kellen, after alienating half of the CBS viewer base, moves on to saying that, it would be so epic if we knocked out old Malolu one by one, which to me seems like the least epic outcome possible, right? That's just a straight pogonging. No one, unless you're like a friend or family member of the old Naviti people, that's not really anything that you're hoping for.
Yeah, it'd be great for her, but I mean, that's not what I want on my TV.
Hey, it's smart gameplay, and we all root for smart gameplay.
Do we think that's what's going to happen? Because we see over on the other tribe their own internal dysfunction plus James's savvy gameplay seems like it's going to flip that whole thing around. On this tribe, though, they seem to be in more dire straits. So we see the entire former Malolo group run off looking for an idol, eventually ends up in the hands of Michael. We'll get onto that in a second. But they seem to think, okay, there's no hope of really breaking them apart. We're just going to need to find an idol and hope and pray that we play it on the right person, and maybe that can get us through.
Like a tweet that I think it was a tweet that Colin put out, you know, we'll keep his spirit alive here. He was saying that more often than not, going into this part of the game where they're still sending people to Ghost Island, it does seem like they're going to have a hard time getting a full consensus to send one person to Ghost Island. So if they're drawing rocks every time that they send somebody, we could be in a situation next week or the week after where it's the exact same thing that happened on the tribe that went to tribal council this week. And, you know, we end up with 4 versus 4 at the next time that this tribe goes to tribal council. If you couldn't tell, I really don't remember their names. So I'm having a really hard time here with that. But, yeah, I think, we could see 4 versus 4, and then it's like, you know, it's anyone's game, just like it was this week.
Yeah. It really depends on who gets sent to Ghost Island or if they even go to tribal. But, I am enjoying the added Ghost Island twist, because it adds another wrinkle into the strategy, because you don't know who's going to be losing a vote, who's going to be immune from a vote. I think it's a lot better than just throwing advantages at people, is having this new game mechanic.
Do you think it's good to have that added variance within the game, where depending on which of the two of them draws the rock in the to see who goes to Ghost Island, that's going to end up affecting the entire course of that vote, and maybe the entire course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Until I don't have a problem with it right now, until something happens where it, like you said, it seems to really affect the season and it really annoys me, then my opinion will probably change again. But right now, I'm really enjoying it.
So before we cut back to the other tribe, we need to give Bradley his 30 seconds that he's due. So the only thing we learn about him is that he hates the new shelter, and Brendan is calling him out in his confessional for complaining all the time.
Yeah, Bradley complaining reminds me of when Dom comes to the United States every so often, and as soon as he gets here, he looks around and he's like, you know, I really like it better back home. This place is just so not great. And I guess, you know, I couldn't really blame him to I couldn't really blame them for not liking the United States in these current years. But yeah, it's a pretty striking similarity.
Yeah, there's never enough sand for my liking, as it turns out. The question that comes out of all of this Bradley stuff is that it is completely standard for people to complain about the living conditions on Survivor. The entire point is that it's an incredibly rough and draining experience, and there's a lot to complain about, and everyone is doing it to some extent. But it's unclear whether Bradley himself is actually doing it more than everyone else always does, or whether he's just taking part in the same conversations that everyone else is, and they decided to heap all of this onto Bradley to portray him in a certain way.
Yeah, you guys can hate on Bradley all you want, and it's true that it doesn't look good for him. He probably doesn't have a great chance at winning because, like you said, everyone's probably complaining about the shelter situation and the uncomfortableness of it all, but the fact that they keep giving that material to Bradley does not look very promising. But I'm going to stick by him. He was my winner pick, and he's still my favorite in the cast. I can relate to him when he complains about everything. I hate sand and dirt, too. That would be exactly what I'd be doing if I was out there on the island. And you'll see. He'll turn into a hero. He already dominated that puzzle in the immunity challenge with nothing but his underwear. I mean, you'll see.
So the real reason is coming out here. Is that why? It's just pure thirst.
Yes, he looks great in his underwear, and I'm having trouble thinking of anything else.
Welcome to Survivor 36, boxers and briefs.
Yeah, can we talk about these wardrobe choices quickly? Because this is an epidemic of boxer briefs, and I'm not here for it, frankly.
Well,
neither is Stephen Fishback. You guys should hang out sometime.
I don't care.
I don't know what you guys are so against. I feel like on both sides of the coin here, like everybody seems like they need their bathing suits like yesterday, but I feel like at the end of the day, everybody wins. I don't know.
Yeah, but I've always been a proponent of the less clothes, the better. Especially in Survivor, where you need, you know, you can't be like weighed down with all that stuff in a challenge. It just makes the most sense to be with as little clothing as possible. And I don't know why you're hating on it.
Yeah, but boxer briefs, for me, they're not ideal in either form or function. So it seems like a strategically suboptimal choice. But I guess I disagree. So we move over to, I don't know, is this New Malolo, Nunaviti? I don't care. We move over to the other tribe now, where Dom and Chris are already going at it right away. As soon as they hit the ground, they're trying to turn on each other again. Dom shows the fake idol to the rest of Malolo and roped them into his plan to go after Chris. As it happens, that's never going to come to pass. Chris goes to Ghost Island. He's safe for the week, and the plan has to change. But what did you make of him not even trying to make amends with Chris? He immediately decided, okay, that's a lost cause. I'm going to these Malolo people. I'm trying to get them on my side instead.
Well, I think he tried to make amends with Chris in the last episode, and it clearly didn't work. So maybe he was able to feel him out, realize that it was going nowhere. Chris still didn't trust him, and it was time to jump ship. So he shows everyone else the fake idol, and they're also not really buying it. I kind of hope that this is a recurring theme, that each week Dom just shows a new person his fake idol, and no one believes him.
Well, it's so Chris already has realized that the way the fake idol was shown to him means there has to be a real one, and he's working on that assumption. And it seemed like the whole time, every stage of this feud was instigated by Dom. It was Dom like doubting Chris's leadership at that first challenge, and then when they got there, all of the nonsense with the idol, and then that kind of spiraled out of their control. So I'm not taking Chris aside here. He definitely seems very prickly, very abrasive, and it's clear why like Angela feels a bit resentful towards him, for instance, along with everyone else there. But Dom is really throwing fuel on that fire, and I wonder if he had just played it a bit more slow, whether this could have been delayed at least for a few more weeks.
I feel like he's a smart guy. I feel like he has a good read on just the people that he's trying to work with. Like, then again, it seems like he doesn't. It seems like, you know, the past 2 weeks he has tried this plan, and ultimately, like, he keeps getting like caught with what's that expression? Caught with your whatever and your whatever. But
yeah, that's the one.
I'm really killing it tonight. Yeah. Well, I think it was like an inappropriate thing that I was thinking of, but. I'm not Brent, so I was probably going to try to keep it PG.
Was he caught with his boxer briefs down? Is that it?
Yeah, that too. Something like that. But yeah, I feel like he figured out pretty quickly that this relationship with Chris is not anything that can be fixed, anything that can be even put together just for like one vote. They were saying on, was it Kellen that was saying, no, it was Morgan that was saying this. She had a confessional where she said, I don't see why we can't just all stick together for at least one vote. Like maybe we can get one vote where all of us just, you know, that we stick together and we make it through. Granted, they didn't have Chris there for that vote, so it's hard to tell how that actually would have played out. But I think Dom just saw that, like, if he wanted to keep moving ahead, like, he's got to bring in some of these other people to gain their trust.
Do you think that the way to resolve that then was to pull an Alan Ball and, like, demand that he drop his briefs and show the world his goods?
You know, we're already working with such little clothing out there in the first place, so you might as well just go full Alan Ball and just everybody start dropping their pants and then we'll play out the rest of the season.
Yeah, Dom would turn the TV off in frustration if that happened. Dom on TV.
That was one of my favorite storylines of this week. Like, where's Michael going to hide his idol?
Right, because he doesn't have any clothes.
That's a good point, actually.
He doesn't have any clothes, and he's got the James Clement idol, which we didn't get into yet. So sorry to jump ahead, but where's he going to hide that thing?
I guess you could try to bury it, but you'd need to spend a lot of time doing it, and it's not the easiest thing to dig back up again either. So it'd be kind of cool if you could pull like the reverse China thing, where like you fix it back onto something on the camp and it just looks so innocuous and no one pays any attention to it. And then I guess before Tribal, you have to like find a moment to just whip it down again. But yeah, I'm not quite sure how that's going to work.
If you were a player out there, and if you know that it's Ghost Island, if you kind of have an idea of the theme, maybe you're looking for this kind of stuff. But if you were just out there and you saw this piece of something that was like attached to your camp and you were like, oh, is that James's idol? Like, do you think you would recognize that? Being a super fan, not like just as some random person, like being a super fan, do you think you would look over, see James's idol and be like, that's James's idol?
I think I would be stuck in the mentality of all of these relics from previous seasons are going to be on Ghost Island and they're going to be confined to that. So if I'm just walking through beside the beach and I see this giant plank of wood, I'm not going to think, oh, that's the idol that James had. I don't know. Yeah. I guess like it's still going to stand out no matter what. It's not just like a naturally occurring thing. So you're going to be curious and pick it up. And at that point, you're just going to read the text and see what it is.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd notice either, but I wouldn't put it past, you know, some super duper fans to be able to point that out and, you know, pick it up and see what it is.
So my question now is James's other idol in play as well? Because we saw when Dom found his real idol, that just looked fairly straightforward. It's any idol that could be on any season. And it's kind of disappointing that we don't see both of those idols in play unless they're saving that one to go in the game at some later point.
Yeah, you'd think that they would have kept those two idols together, but I'm glad that they didn't, because we don't need someone to be, you know, handed two idols in the beginning of the game. But I feel like they've got to have some kind of plan with that other idol.
Well, do you think that they might end up doing some kind of situation where they give the other idol to somebody and say, if you put these two idols together, it becomes a super idol, like we've seen with the other super idols?
Anything is possible.
It's not the same idol, so it's not like they're reversing the curse of this by making James's idols, you know, more powerful, but like, I don't know. It seems like if they didn't put them together, they might have some other plan, or we're just reading way too much into it.
That's a really fun thought, though. I don't know if it goes with the like the theme of the season, because now you're not just restoring an old advantage. You're like adding stuff onto it to make it look like a different advantage. So maybe that's just too convoluted. Maybe they just have to keep it simple.
Nothing would surprise me. There's nothing that this show could do this season that I would be shocked to see.
Yeah, I'm already bracing myself for some like Tyler Perry idol to just materialize at the final six or something and ruin the entire end game, but hopefully we can put that off for the time being.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, that's my thing for this season, that I feel like, you know, at least for last season, I went into it thinking, you know, all right, the idols are getting a little tiresome, these advantages, and then the final four twist happened and all that stuff. But this season, we knew to go into it expecting that there was going to be idols everywhere, advantages everywhere. So at least it's like we were fully prepared, and no one can say like, wow, there's so much out here. Like we knew this was coming.
We did, but I don't know if that makes it that much better. I don't want to give them full license to just do whatever
definitely
they want.
Definitely not.
Because,
but if
yeah.
Yeah, definitely doesn't make it any better, but I guess in some way, just to at least have some kind of idea that this is going to happen. I don't know.
So even before all of this, though, Chris is the first person we see trying to turn on Dom. He tells Angela to stop thinking with her heart, put her army instinct on. He says that Dom has the idol and they need to go after him. And he approaches the Malolos first, at least on the storyline that we were shown, and tells them to. And he tries to get them on board to vote out Dom. So quickly, the Malolos realize that they are sitting pretty in the middle here. Both sides are coming to them, trying to get their votes. And they get to choose how they want the game to go from here. And Angela isn't having any of it. She doesn't like Chris's manner when he's speaking to her. And also, she is solidly Team Naviti. She wants to be Naviti strong all the way. She's big on that loyalty. And that ends up burning her in the end. She is the person who ends up receiving the former Naviti members' votes. So going into next week, do you think she's going to still hold that line? Or is she going to instantly flip to the Malolo people? And I guess when Chris comes back, he's going to have a lot to say about that too.
I mean, her whole former tribe just tried to vote her out, so I feel like whatever loyalty she felt with them, it has to be gone now. It wouldn't make sense for her to stick with the people that just tried to get her out. I think now she just goes back to the old Malolo crew and tries to work with them.
Yeah, she wasn't loving the way that Chris was talking to her, which was 100% fair. He, you know, does not need to sit there and take orders from Chris for anything, for any reason. So yeah, she starts looking at him like, you know, like she's telling, looking at a baby. Like she's like, I want nothing to do with this. But, next week, I don't know if she's going to go running back to him or not. It just feels like she kind of has to, because she doesn't have much else to turn to. She can try to link herself up with the solid block of four. But are they gonna want her, or is she just gonna have to go back to Chris and hope that, you know, somebody will work with her?
I mean, they'll work with her. There's still only four people in a tribe of eight. So depending on if, you know, one of them gets sent to Ghost Island, they're still gonna need a number or two. So I think they open her with they welcome her with open arms if she wants to join with their side.
Well, that's the debate. It's whether or not they're gonna take the other side.
And right. That might be the most fun scenario next week, is if one of the Malolo people gets sent to Ghost Island. So now it's effectively 3-2 versus 2 again?
2, yeah. 3-2-2.
So if it's 3-2-2, okay. And it becomes, can those groups of two team back up again, knowing that if they turn on each other, then they're always going to be in the minority going ahead now? Or do they think, well, I just can't trust them. I have to flip. I have to team up with the Malolo people, and that's my new alliance going forward.
Yeah, it seems like so simple to just team up and take out the power group in the middle there if they have the chance. But I just don't think Dom and Chris are ever going to be able to work with each other, and it'll be to the detriment of one of them or both of them.
Yeah, I think it might be a smart choice, actually, though, because if what we often see is these post-swap alliances end up being the most durable ones. And if it is old Naviti just having this very uneasy truce until they get rid of the Malolo people, there are so many Malolos to get rid of that's not going to last the whole time. And then when there's another swap or a merge or something, it's just open season again of Chris versus Dom. So I wonder if now you're meant to just go with the Malolo people, get this group of 5 or 6 people together, and then that's a pretty, those are good numbers. That's a nice large block that you can take. And if you all stick together, then that could work pretty well.
Yeah, the trouble is that Chris and Dom are both going to be fighting to get those Malolos in the middle, and they're both just going to have to hope that the Malolos pick their side when they could just team up together and go after them. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's at this point, it seems inevitable that those two sides just have to go after each other. So they just have to make the best pitch to the Malolo group that they can.
I was going to say, after Matt Track gets cancelled, the next pilot we're floating is Malolo's in the Middle as our new sitcom, which I think has a lot of promise to it.
After the amount of technical errors we're having tonight, I think Matt Chat is really not looking good for a second episode.
One and done. It's been fun though.
But yeah, no, I was thinking that like this, the possibility of them teaming up against that four or three if there's somebody at Ghost Island. I just don't know if anybody's looking at that group. And even though that they seem like they have the power to us right now, it's like, they just look so unintimidating. Like, no offense, I guess I can't really say no offense. And as much as I love all four of them so far, I don't know if anyone's looking at, like, Donathan, James, who, you know, just struggled in that challenge, Laurel and Libby, and saying, like, this is a powerful duo of four. We need to break this up.
It is this band of misfits on the surface, right? But I think they have the cohesion as a group to work well together, because it seems like no one in there is this really overbearing personality. You know, Donathan seems fairly laid back. Laurel is playing a fairly quiet game, it looks like, at the moment. And even James, who maybe is the figurehead, he's not putting his foot down. He's not barking orders like Chris is. He's just, in true management consultant style, he's being very consensus-driven about it, right? And then Libby, we saw some from her this episode, and she was one of the main players, but she's not a big personality either. So I think that might actually be a good just recipe for success. You don't need to have like this alpha male who needs to impose their will on everything.
We've never seen like Survivor alliances with like these big, you know, type A personalities or you know, being the most successful one. So I feel like this alliance is good that, you know, they can probably get far, but I don't think anyone's looking at them like some big crazy threat. So I don't know. I'm repeating myself.
So if you were two of those Malolos in the Middle, which of those pairs would you want to go with? Do you go with Dom and Wendell, or do you try and side with Chris and Angela?
You assume that Dom has the idol. The easy move is to just link up with Chris and Angela and split the vote with Dom and Wendell just to ensure that you get the idol out of there. But can I just point out how fun this is? This Ghost Island twist, it's so hard to predict what's going to happen next week because we don't even know what the voting structure is going to be. We don't know if it's going to be 3 versus 2 versus 2. We don't know if it's going to be 4 against 3. I really like this. It's making it near impossible to try to predict things because you don't know who's going to be there and who's going to be in the vote.
Yeah, as a viewer, I love it. I imagine if you're in the game and you have no certainty at any given time, it's got to be really aggravating to try and
so frustrating.
Work through all of that. Yeah, but I think that choice comes down to this question that I think could go either way. Of it's pretty clear Chris is alienating a lot of people, even Angela, who it seems like was going to be his closest ally. So you could look at that and say, well, that's rough because at the merge, he can't bring in any more people. Like, we're stuck with what we have unless we can do it ourselves. Or you can say, well, he has no one else to go back to now. So he can't thank us for our votes and then scurry off back to the former Naviti people. He has to stick with us and stick with our group. So maybe it's going to be so hard to make that choice without seeing everything that they're seeing. But you could take that either way, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I just think that the fear of a potential idol is so strong that if they're even wavering, they'll just go with Chris just to try to knock out the idol and then hope that, you know, Chris doesn't have anywhere else to go, so he has to stick with them moving forward.
Yeah, we all seem fairly down on Chris. Do you think we're meant to be? Is that what the show is pushing for? Because we see Angela call him out for being bossy. We see the others just take him to task constantly for how like awkward and annoying he is. But at the same time, he gets this scene on Ghost Island this week, which was maybe one of the most memorable of the whole episode, which really served to humanize him and show why he's there. He's playing for this larger purpose. So is he meant to be the hero, or is it consciously meant to be this complex portrayal?
Yeah, I don't know.
I need to see one more person go to Ghost Island to see if it's going to be just a trend that every time that somebody goes to Ghost Island, we get a package about, you know, who they are as a person and why they're there and you know, what they're fighting for. So if we see Chelsea go to Ghost Island next week and we hear all about her and her family, then I feel like I'll take this scene of Chris a little less seriously. But it does feel like exactly like you're saying, it seems like they're trying to throw him a bone or humanize him a little bit and make him seem like he's not just this goofy maniac who's running around the island with like awful plans that is shooting himself in the foot.
Right. That scene seemingly came out of nowhere. It was so unfair to us as viewers because I thought they were building him up to be this unlikable, you know, douchebag for the first three episodes that we're just supposed to make fun of and root against. And then he goes to Ghost Island and I'm all like down to like continue to rag on him a little more. And then all of a sudden he just has this emotional scene about his mom and everything. And now I feel bad. Now I feel bad that I ever hated him to begin with.
You're fickle, though. There will be some like small thing he does next week and you'll be right back to hating him again.
Absolutely. I already hate him just thinking about him before that Ghost Island scene.
Yeah, that's how the entire fandom works. It turns into Chris versus Dom again, and when Dom shows the fake idol with the tree mail, as he put it, and it's interesting that we saw Brendan when Jacob was telling a story about his fake idol, or at least telling a story about what he said he found. Brendan immediately called him out and said, okay, so where's the piece of paper that came with it? And that's what blew up Jacob's entire lie. In the moment here, no one was asking Dom for any kind of verification, right? They were taking him at face value. But then as soon as he leaves, James says, well, that guy is Russell 2.0. He sees through that idol bluff and accurately calls out that if this guy is swearing on his kids and has to do that to sound convincing, he probably is not selling you anything that you want to be buying. And he quickly gets all of the Malolo people on board with voting against them. What did you make of that eventual decision, though? Because if Dom is voting Angela, then, as James points out, Old Malolo can basically do what they want. Their four votes control the outcome. So do you go with Morgan, which is what they decided on, or do you take a shot at Dom? Do you try and get him and his idol out of the game at that point?
I'm going with the Morgan play.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. I like the play they ultimately went with. I thought James was really smart that he immediately sussed it out. He immediately makes good points as soon as he leaves as to why Dom is probably lying if he has to, you know, swear up and down on his kids and family and stuff. And then I just think at this point in the game, Morgan is just a safe play. You know, you don't have the numbers to split the vote. So if you think Dom has an idol, it's just too dangerous. Where if he, you know, sniffs something out of tribal council, he could play it. And then maybe one of you guys go home. You don't want to go. You don't want to follow Dom's lead and go Angela, because what if he's just playing you? So I think, and they said they needed Wendell for the challenge. So I think Morgan just made a lot of sense, and it was just the safe choice for them.
Yeah, because the concern seemed to be, if Dom is telling us this plan and he wants us to vote for Angela, if we vote for Angela, he can give his idol there, and then the vote will rebound back on us. But if that's what you're worried about, then it seems like the door is open to put your votes on Dom and take him out with the idol maybe in his pocket.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's you could just not risk that, get Morgan, and then, you know, hopefully if they're able to get Chris and Angela on their side now for this upcoming week, they'll have enough numbers to split the vote between Dom and Wendell and just knock out the idol next week. You don't have to knock out Dom and his idol immediately. I think they made the correct safe choice.
I think a big thing that comes into play anytime there's a tribe swap is when people are on one tribe and, you know, they haven't met the people from the other tribe yet, they have so much downtime and they have nothing to talk about besides each other. And I've heard before that they spend a lot of time talking about the other tribe, and they just kind of like talk about like, what do you think this person's like? This person looks strong. This person looks smart. All they can do is speculate. So you have to imagine that the four of them spent time on the other tribe talking about Dominic and saying like, oh wow, this guy looks strong, like maybe smart. You know, there's got to be some kind of, you know, just aesthetic comparisons to like, oh, he seems like a Tony type or a Russell type. So if that's what they have in their mind, and if they've been talking about this at their camp, when they finally join up with this guy, I feel like they're just immediately cautious of him, and they're just hesitant to even listen to anything that he has to say because they already have this idea in their head that this guy is probably smart and knows what he's doing. And then, you know, he runs over to them and he starts talking to them with this plan that he has to gain trust. And they're like, it's just confirming what they might have already thought, if that's the case.
Yeah, on the bright side now, he did prove with his vote that he was telling them the truth. So maybe he could leverage that going forward.
Maybe, although Dom does seem like the type to not forgive and forget, something like that. So if I'm the Malolo people, even if Dom comes pleading to me for the next vote, I'm thinking, okay, he's already calculating in his head when he can knife us a few votes down the road. Whereas Chris and Angela, they do seem like genuinely loyal people, or at least once they have a group, they'll stick with that group, even if they're willing to cut anyone who's outside of it. So I would always be more happy going with them, even if I find them abrasive or annoying or a bit hard to work with sometimes.
No, yeah, you're right. I'm going with Chris and Angela as well from then, even though, you know, I think Dom and Wendell would be the more likable duo to work with. I think you're right that it probably just makes more sense to go with the more abrasive duo.
Yeah, so we see that James and the others decide on Morgan, or should I say James and the others minus Libby, because Libby is getting very close to Morgan, and she has these reservations about voting her off. And in that group huddle that we see, she's the one arguing most strongly to go after Wendell, or to go after someone else. And she eventually does go along and vote out Morgan. You need this vote to go the way you want, so maybe just give Libby what she's asking for, and we can deal with that later. Or you can say, well, if that's an issue now, if Libby's already this reluctant to vote her off, that's just going to become even more pronounced over time when Morgan has another 3 or 6 days to work her magic and sink her claws in. So maybe we just have to axe that now, and Libby's not going to like it, but it's going to be easier now than later on.
If everyone is down to vote out Morgan except for one person, they should not just, you know, appease Libby because she wants Morgan to stay. You stick with the game plan, and then, especially if you think that Libby and Morgan might be close, because you don't want her, you know, eventually maybe leaving them and playing with Morgan down the line. So it wouldn't have made sense to just appease Libby in that situation. They had to vote her out at that point.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, she's much closer with the other three than she is with Morgan, who she just met. So, you know, it's probably crappy for her to have to lose this new friend, but it made sense, and I'm glad for her sake that she didn't, you know, stay too attached to Morgan and try to fight it, because I feel like that just would have been, you know, it just would have put her in a bad light.
Right. She met Morgan a day ago. How close were they really? And all these people, you know, talking about Queen Libby and talking about how cold and awesome she, like, I really don't get it. All she did was vote with her tribe. She stuck to the plan and just didn't make a stupid move and try to flip with someone she met a day ago. She didn't do anything special. She just made the correct move, and it just happened to be against her friend.
It was a new person getting airtime. I think everybody just got excited.
Oh yeah, she didn't get a confessional. Now everyone just sees her talking, and they're like, "Oh my god, she's amazing! Look at the moves she's making." She didn't make a move. James seemed like he'd made the decision, and she just voted out her friends.
In week 8, when Chelsea gets her first sentence, the entire internet will be, "Yes, Queen Slay."
I'm ready.
I can't wait for that. I'm so ready for that.
I'm all for Queen Chelsea. Queen Libby can go.
But on Libby quickly, I know that's the line that I know Josh Wiggler and a few others are pushing too, of watch out for Libby. Like, as she herself says, she might seem like she's sweet and innocent and just the ditzy blonde, but she does have this steel to her. But as you said, I'm not sure if that's borne out by what we've actually seen so far. Like, we saw when Morgan left, Libby was burying her head in her hand. She seemed genuinely distraught that she had to go through with that. And then Morgan herself has said in her exit press that on the route to tribal council, Libby like wasn't making eye contact with her. She wasn't talking to her. And she knew that something was up, even if she didn't know it was coming against her. So I'm not seeing like the mastermind edit for Libby yet, but maybe we should give it some more time.
Yeah, this is a false narrative. Libby's just going to be unceremoniously voted out at some point down the line, and we're gonna forget we were ever obsessed with her back in episode 3.
Do either of you have any closing thoughts on Morgan? Because she received a lot of preseason hype. Other contestants said that she seemed Spratlin-esque. Turns out that maybe isn't the case. But what is there potential there? Is there Kelly Wentworth upside maybe, or was this you know about what we can expect from Morgan?
Yeah, no upside. This is another one I didn't get the hype. Everyone was calling her the next Kim Spratlin. I don't understand. I thought she was annoying in her preseason interviews, and then she was annoying as soon as she hit the beach. She doesn't talk to people. She shouts at people. She's like wildly moving her arms and shouting. I don't understand how anyone was able to live with her, and it makes sense that she was the one voted out at the first tribal council she went to. We're at the point where we're just talking about all the people I couldn't stand, so I don't understand the Kim Spradlin comparison at all. I did not get any Spradlin vibes from her.
It did seem like Morgan was talking on like 0.5 speed sometimes, where everything was just kind of like elongated and belabored, and she was like exaggerating to make these points.
The volume up as high as it goes.
Yeah, Luguri, what did you think of Morgan?
I mean, in the preseason, I look for different things in the players that, you know, in the cast to say, like, all right, so if my winner pick last season didn't work, what am I doing wrong? What do I need to look for this time? I look at, you know, previous like drafts that I've taken part in, and I'm like, all right, so if I'm picking the wrong players here, like, what do I need to look for? So I looked at Morgan and I was like, all right, she seems nice. She's very bubbly. She just seems like somebody who isn't going to like offend anybody. Like she's, you know, she's easy to get along with. And I was high on her going into the preseason, going into the season. I think I had her ranked like at least in the top 10. I don't know how high up, but I thought that we might get her. I for sure thought we would get her at least to the merge, but I didn't see this coming. I never saw her as anything like Spradlin-esque. I didn't get those vibes either, so I don't really know where that came from. But it sounded like that just kind of came from the people that were at Ponderosa, you know, in the beginning. And it was just like, oh, who's this person look like she may be like? And it's like, oh, tall, pretty woman, Kim Spradlin. There you go. But I mean, as for like Kelly Wentworth upside, I'm going to have to say no, like pass.
I feel bad for her though, because you could tell she was genuinely crushed that she left that early and in the way that she did. And I do think if she specifically hadn't been the target there, like if that corner VD group had taken control, she would have been in a great spot, because like she's not going to be the first target when you have Dom and Wendell there. And then even Chris and Angela seem to be on pretty good terms with her. So and like she was getting very close to Libby, supposedly. So I don't know. I think there's something there, but we are not going to see it for the rest of this season. We are going to lose Morgan here, and everyone seems to be surprised by it. The Malolo seem relieved that it worked. Dominic just exclaims, what? Not as good as Andreas, I will add, but still with a lot of force behind it.
What? Oh, you guys!
The sense I get, though, is we're not meant to think that like Wendell is going to be this robbed pre-merge goddess. I think Wendell has some legs. I think Dom is going to be a longer-term player. So edit-wise, and I guess we're going to officially enter the edit zone here. Do we think that the Malolos will side with Chris and Angela, or are they going to go back to Dom and Wendell?
Well, Gore, you can take this.
My final answer is going to be Dom and Wendell. I don't think that anybody can reasonably expect that they can work with Chris long term. So I feel like out of the options of like somebody who seems completely insane, and then the options of like two level-headed people, even though one of them seems like a big threat, I feel like you got to get rid of the wild card and take Chris out.
I guess. I don't know. I still feel like it just makes more sense for them to play with Chris and Angela. But like you said, it just doesn't seem like Wendell or Dom are leaving anytime in the pre-merge. So I don't know. Maybe they don't go to tribal again until the next tribe swap. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too, because you can imagine if, let's say they just win the next few challenges, we go into the next swap, and then Chris and Dom end up on opposite tribes, let's say. That could be a post-merge storyline now. When they get to the merge, that could be the defining conflict again. But if there is another swap, that's going to mess with a lot of our understanding of who's in a good spot, and also who we're meant to think is in a good spot too. Because if the game's going to get shaken up in 2 weeks, then again, why? Same kind of thing we said about the premiere. Why even bother investing any time in some of these people if all of that's going to change before it even matters again?
Right. That was my initial problem with the early tribe swaps. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But too many tribe swaps are probably not ideal.
So as we zoom out a little bit, who do we think is getting a good winner's edit right now? Because I said earlier that it seems like it's all in on Malolo. And Naviti, I like Wendell, seems to be fading into the background a bit. I'm going to be very intrigued to see what he gets next week. Like if he gets this like extended confessional about, okay, this is what I expected to happen and it didn't happen, so this is where my game goes from here and here's how I fix things, then I think he's still on the board. But as it is, if he just is now another member of the minority and he's fighting to save himself and he doesn't get too much on that, then I'm willing to kind of move him to the side here. But in the meantime, like, I could see so many of these Malolo people going on to win. Like, I think James is a real contender after this week. Stephanie Johnson, who I think
we haven't even talked about her.
This is, yeah, literally the first time her name has come up this week. She still is looking
fantastic.
Didn't that
happen last week, too? I was listening to you guys last week, and you guys got, like, an hour and a half into the podcast and first brought up Stephanie Johnson.
She's great, though. That's not for lack of trying. She is. She is a sensation. But like Brendan, I think he's more low key at the moment, but I could see him having legs. Even Michael, your boy Liguri, I'm not buying the hype, but he's there with a chance. Like, I'm going to give you that much. I'll ask you guys this. Do we think Donathan, is this just going to be another growth edit? And he's going to have this amazing journey that we all appreciate, but it's going to fall just short of the end. Or is this setting him up for, like, Donathan is going to have the ultimate journey that culminates in him winning Survivor?
No, I think this is the classic journey guy that, starts off on the bottom, you know, builds himself up throughout the season and then gets cut right before the end. Full disclosure, though, I'm not a professional at reading the edit, so everything I'm saying is probably wrong. If I'm watching with a bunch of casuals, I could wow people with, like, predicting who's going to go home at Tribal, but I'm nothing compared to you and Colin.
I mean, our success rate isn't the best, so...
The thing is, you guys sound like you know what you're talking about. Or at least Colin does a great job at convincing me that he knows what he's talking about before it inevitably comes out that he doesn't.
That's the entire secret of podcasting, and it's why Colin is so good at it, is you have to just fire off these hot takes with as much confidence as possible, even if it's not based on anything remotely grounded in reality at all.
Yeah, he talks in such sweeping declarations that it's impossible not to just, you know, think that he knows what he's talking about. As far as I'm concerned, you seem to think that the Malolo tribe is the tribe of interest here, at least the old Malolo tribe, but Kellen has been getting a lot of screen time. She seems to be coming from the Michelle Fitzgerald school of why is she getting that confessional. So that seems to be pretty promising for her. I really like Stephanie, and I hope that it's not the case where she is just the pre-merge star that gets voted out right before the merge. But, you know, based on what everyone's been... I mean, it does seem like that's a strong possibility for that to happen.
I really don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I hope this is a potential winner at it in the making, but I'm afraid that it's because I really do like Stephanie. I think she's been a lot of fun so far.
Oh, I love
you know
Stephanie.
We haven't talked about tonight?
Bradley!
We haven't talked about... Okay, we've talked about Bradley. we haven't talked about the new couple that we found out about today that through Instagram.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
Sebastian and Jenna, the power couple.
Jenna,
I don't know.
Yeah, Jenna's
the
most.
One of them can win.
Yeah, Jenna's the most boring contestant that's ever been cast, so we don't even have to waste our breath talking about her. Sebastian,
even worse than Libby.
No, Libby's not that boring. Jenna's the most boring survivor that's ever been cast. Libby is just a, you know, terrible person in general.
Just a terrible human being. You know, he's right. Absolute trash.
I really like Sebastian. His confessionals are gold. I wish he was getting more screen time, though. That's the only problem.
I'm glad that we can outsource all of the personal attacks onto Gagan, so that next week I'm going to have a clean bill of health. Wouldn't have to go on this apology tour to all the people that were insulted on the podcast the previous week.
How I felt when I had Matt do the preseason power rankings with me, and he was like down on every single person in the cast besides his winner pick, and I was like, wow, like if anyone reads this, like I'm gonna look like an angel compared to him.
No, well, I just assume that no one knows who I am and is not gonna take what I say seriously, but there's like half the cast I really love and half the cast I really hate, which is, I think that's how it should be.
I guess you're an official part of our brand now, so we gotta, you know, get some standards up in here. But
that's it,
Matt hates
that's
her.
It no, I don't hate her, she's just boring and we shouldn't waste time
talking
about her.
You absolutely hate her.
I don't hate her. I just think she's boring.
Maybe questionable taste in men. But other than that, nothing against her.
How dare you?
I'd known about this for a while, and I didn't want to mention anything about it because it seemed kind of spoilerish. Like, of course, they're going to get close enough in the game that this is going to become a thing.
Why did you have the scoop, Don?
Oh, well,
yeah, you never told us.
Well, I didn't want to spoil people if they considered that spoilerish. But apparently that's not a concern with you guys, so no. So far away.
Haley doesn't care about that. No, she's going to spoil all the couples on the cast.
No,
I definitely don't think it's any kind of spoiler. I feel like people from any kind of, you know, reality show cast that end up dating after the show, I feel like they know each other, and you know, there's no way to know if it happened on the show or not. But yeah, I mean, sorry if you consider that a spoiler, but we found their Instagram today, that it's like a couple Instagram, Tarzan and Jen. So look that up if it piques your interest.
I wish them the best.
That's why I joined Instagram, DomHRV, by the way, just to follow them. You know, I need all of my Tarzan and Jen updates just live as they happen.
Yeah.
2018 and Dom Harvey is giving Instagram plugs. I love it.
I mean, I might have to get an Instagram as well to follow only Tarzan and Jen.
And me, of course.
And Dom. And Dom.
Yeah, but see, what piques my interest here is that apparently they are not the only couple this season. I don't know who the other one is, and I'm shipping lots of different combinations in my head as we speak. But that itself is a rarity, because you sometimes get one couple coming out of a season, and who knows how long that tends to last for. But having multiple is strange, and maybe it's with a cast this young, it's more likely. But even so, that's kind of odd to see.
Who could it be?
I didn't know there was another couple, but now I'm very interested in.
Now I'm just running, running through the cast list, thinking of who it could be.
I feel like this is bound to happen, though. Like, we just spent, you know, 10 minutes before talking about all the boxers and briefs. I feel like they got to know each other right. So well out there, but like they were bound to come home and, like, you know, date.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
they got to know each other over a nice seafood dinner. Yeah,
isn't this the edit zone? Like, this is so derailed. We need Colin back.
This entire thing is.
I don't know why you want Colin back so much. I'm having a good time.
I'm having fun, but I feel like I just like I'm letting everybody down. I just I'm so off track. I'm just thinking about the boxers and the briefs and the Jennas and the borings and Matt hates Jenna. I don't know.
You've been so down on yourself today.
Yeah, you're turning into James Lim.
Winner of Survivor 36,
King James. Yeah, this is the King James Bible right here. This is the testament of our God James. But I sincerely do like James, though, and I would be happy with him as a winner. And I think that is much more on the table to return to the edit zone now, and I guess to the gameplay analysis too. I think that's a much more realistic possibility than it looked last week.
Yeah,
these next few weeks will really help us fish out, like, who, you know, especially in terms of the edit, it'll really help us get an idea of whose edits are, like, maybe the Allie's or maybe the potentially Stephanie Johnson's that they're going to go out pre-merge, and then who's going to actually stick around. We've gotten a decent amount of personal content from a lot of people, you know, including somebody like Chris, who we all think is, like, you know, playing so hard and potentially going to flame out at any minute. So it's hard to tell if the personal content is, like, going to mean much towards, you know, some of these winner edits, or if it's just going to be like, you know, we need to see more gameplay from them.
So do you guys have anything else to add before I bring this to its natural conclusion?
Get me out of here.
I just want you guys all to know who said it first when Bradley starts getting his hero edit in the next couple of episodes and goes on to win the game.
Well, if people want to give the receipts to you about that, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at MattyFresh24. And if I make an Instagram to follow you and Tarzan.
Yeah, I realized just now that we didn't even give the plugs like we're meant to do before the edit zone starts. So
Who cares?
So not great for your social media marketing here, but we'll see how it goes.
I only want people following me that listen to the edit zone, so this works out perfectly.
Liguri, do you share that philosophy, and where can those edit zone listeners find you if they're so inclined?
I do share that philosophy. I feel like if you aren't listening to the edit zone every single week, especially just to listen to that great Will from America drop, like, all the way through. Like, if you turn it off before... Oh, no, that's not even Will. Who's that? Who made that? Somebody else?
Jonathan Clark, I believe. Shout out to him. Unless it's someone else. In which case, shout out to them instead.
I think I just assume that every single song and sound drop is from Will.
At this point.
And
he did invent the concept of music, as far as I know.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah. If you want to, follow me or find me for any reason, Twitter at Matt Liguori, and I'm sorry about this podcast.
I don't even know that Colin would want to be associated with this episode, but if he does, you can find him on Twitter at Colin Stone. You can find me again at DomHRV. If you want to, you can email us domandcolin@gmail.com. But be gentle, okay? This has been a tough week for all of us. And then I think that's going to do it. So let's just get out of here. I can't even think of anything else. Let's drop the mic and all move on with our lives.
Thanks for having us, Dom.
Love you, Dom.